The Baha'i writings say that racism is the most challenging issue confronting America. And to ignore this problem will expose the country to physical, moral, and spiritual danger. In 1912, Abdu'l-Bahá said that if the races do not come to an agreement, there can be no question or doubt of bloodshed. I have witnessed these two quotes play out in Chicago. Since 2012, four of my former students have been shot and killed. Daquan, Cornelius, also known as Cornbread, Dion, and Antonio. You don't go one day in Chicago without hearing about a shooting or a killing, and it leaves you breathless if it's someone you know. The Chicago Tribune said that as of November, 3,300 people have been shot in 2017. And to think that one of those numbers was our child that we went camping with, we helped in after-school programs, that we sang with, that we ate next to, is now gone before they could reach their full potential just takes a piece of your heart. And I can't imagine what their parents are going through, or their siblings, or their friends. With each shooting comes a level of trauma, just a rippling effect going through the community. So in Chicago, that's where I was born and raised. And I see two different Chicagos. There's the beautiful, affluent city that has arts and culture and team sports and plenty of opportunities. And then there's the other Chicago that suffers from inequity and the legacy of slavery that still stains our institutions. I have the privilege to walk through both worlds. So I use resources from one to help the other. I've worked with high-profile nonprofits for the past 20 years, bringing resources to Black and Latino communities. I have my master's in community development and social justice, and that's where I learned about the history of Chicago and how the communities were formed. And I was in class either crying or angry or yelling at somebody every class period because I had a lot of aha moments of how my life was shaped. I said, oh, okay, I get it now. That's why my grandfather had to sell his four-story building after 50 years of owning it. That's gentrification. And I get it now. My parents live where they live now because of redlining. And that's where real estate agents steer people of color into certain neighborhoods to be where they should live. Oh, I understand. I get it. And it took me to get my master's degree just to get a glimpse of the real game that we're playing. And so now I go around telling everybody everything that I learned, and I'm trying to gain more knowledge from other people that are impacted by racism. And so this past year, I wanted to focus my efforts in my own neighborhood, which is Bronzeville, also known as the Black metropolis of Chicago. And I knew from my studies and my previous work that if I wanted to really be impactful, I needed to help build capacity around this issue on the individual level, the community level, and the institutional level. I needed to get everybody in the room, from educators and students and health practitioners, the police department, faith-based leaders, elected officials. Everybody needed to be in the room learning the same thing so that we can move forward together. And so I worked with influential leaders that are already doing good work in the neighborhood. Sitting at the table were representatives from the Chicago Police Department, the Chicago Public Schools, and institutions like University of Chicago and Illinois Institute of Technology. We also had nonprofits around the table, Bright Star Community Outreach, the Baha'i Community, the Brownsville Community Action Council, the Community Builders, Sacred Keepers Sustainability Lab, and 2911 Consulting. I name all them so you can look them up and help their efforts because they do good work. So for the year, we focused on racism, mental health, and healing, called Brownsville Be the Healing. And we brought Dr. Joy DeGruy in to be the trainer for that full year. She is a world-renowned educator, trainer, and author of post-traumatic slave syndrome. And she came to Chicago 3 times and gave 4 different trainings. I remember the first time I heard Dr. DeGruy. It was like I began to heal from the anxiety that I felt of not knowing how to move through the world. And I began to get over the feelings of always being wrong or not smart enough, or I'm about to get in trouble. She talked about the cultural value system, how the legacy of slavery still plagues our country, and what it looks like on a day-to-day basis. I felt like I had a new lens on how to see the world, and I was given tools on how to articulate what I felt on a day-to-day basis. And after that talk, I wanted to put all my efforts to get all my friends and everyone that I worked with in front of her so that they can have this same transformation that I had and begin to heal and help others. And so after a multitude of meetings, a lot of prayer, a lot of tears, and generous donors, we were able to get approximately 1,000 people in front of Dr. Joy DeGruy this past year. We had everyone. We had high school students, we had parents, we had the police department, we had educators, health practitioners, politicians, we had everyone in the room. And after each training, there were reflection gatherings so that they can digest what they learned and figure out what to do with the knowledge. One person said, "Every molecule in my body was transformed. And now I need to do something to help others." The police department talked about it in their peace circle. Churches started book clubs. And participants in the training that didn't even know each other came together and held an event about the history of Chicago and the Great Migration. And environmentalists that were in the room came together and said, "We need to do something." And they've already held 2 Heal the Healer retreats for frontline workers of service. And the participants there learned about meditation, good sleeping habits, and how we're all interconnected with each other and the earth. There was a rippling effect of healing going on. Dr. King said, "Those who love peace must learn to organize as effectively as those who love war." This means that we need to have a collective thought about our resources, our thoughts, and our actions. Everything from our data, our strategic plans, our human capital, our materials and supplies, our mindset, all need to be focused on one common goal. This needs to be a consultative process with everyone at the table and not a dictatorship. And most importantly, we need to transform our hearts and expand our minds and understand that we are one universal family. One family. The Baha'i writings say that the fundamental solution to racial and ethnic conflict, the solution to racial and ethnic conflict rests ultimately on the common recognition of the oneness of humankind. We are one people, my friends, one people. And this is a spiritual truth, and science has confirmed it. So we need to wrap our heads around this concept, or no policies, no strategies, no structural changes are gonna uphold justice. Now, Chicago has a long way to go, but I see organizations coming together to address violence, racism, and mental health. And as of now, there are 700 less shootings than last year. So there's hope. So my challenge to you is this. Think about what your skill set is. Think about what you're good at. And apply that to healing racism. What can you do? Are you a student? Are you a parent? Are you an educator? Are you a healthcare practitioner? Are you a law enforcer? Whatever arena you're in, you have a contribution to make. And it needs to be a collective effort. So I want you to think about how your gift contributes to healing racism, the most vital and challenging issue confronting America. Thank you.